perhaps you, yes, you, can help solve a mystery. Hello. Welcome, friends, to Stack Pack 2021. We have not left you. We are still here. I'm David Howell, joined by Daniel Benavidez, Plum Dan.
Oh, that should be my new...
He's just Plum. What cute.
What did you call him?
Plum Dan.
Plum Dan?
Or, yeah, and Eli.
He's as cute as a plum.
Eli Dominguez, our Big Bang Vinyl Dad, still holding up the fort in Texas.
Yes, you're all still here.
So we're going to get into, eventually, Season 5, Episode 3, but we're going to... Season 5, Episode 3 didn't necessarily intrigue the shit out of us, so we're going to talk about a lot of different true crimey things, and Eli...
Oh, yeah, we are.
Eli wanted to tell us... I guess just don't use names, right?
No, yeah. You can definitely look him up. You can definitely look this cat up, though. So this guy... Okay, 2004, this is way before I started there.
So this is a guy... well, give some context to the...
Yeah, so this guy used to work at the company that I work at now in 2004. He actually had the same title as me, so all these years ago. So yeah, 2004, I had
ball just washer, graduated. Right?
Ball washer.
You watch the guy, the head guy's balls.
Yeah, that's what we do, man.
Yeah, yeah.
So check this out. So in 2004, I just found out about this story. So I actually had to do the research and like Google this dude. So I found out about what happened at the very end. Okay. But I'm just telling you what I found out doing my research. So in 2004, the company, one of the guys that worked at the company had a pool party. A bunch of the employees went, I guess an altercation happened. According to what I've read, they fought about work, which sucks. So the guy ended up, this altercation happened. This dude who I'm referring to stabbed the other individual in the chest and killed him.
Jesus.
Nothing happened to him as far as law enforcement and recourse goes. Like, he basically just got a slap on the wrist. He got probation and he lost his job. So our company was like, I'm sorry, you murdered an employee. you cannot work here.
Dang.
And apparently he had a bunch of anger issues. So fast forward, apparently the anger articles say that-
A little.
Articles that I read say he retired, but people that I know who knew this guy said that he really didn't retire. He basically just moved around to different aircraft, smaller aircraft companies here in town, like I guess companies that make aircraft parts or whatever. So he was working at these little places. So sometime later, he ordered this like Filipino mail order bride. Ooh. So they had kids and all this stuff.
He ordered a woman to be sent to him in the U.S. That's a thing.
Basically. Yeah.
Wow. How did she arrive? Did she arrive like via normal aircraft, or did she like show up in
UPS
like
ground
in like a crate?
Oh my God.
DHL.
It's so fucked up. Like,
it is.
This was 15 years ago? Like,
it's
crazy. Okay, sorry, continue.
So, anyways, yeah, he gets married. They have children. And according
subscribe to Wife Box.
According to her, I guess they were arguing. They were having issues. She ended up flying the kid back to the Philippines. They were, you know, going to go through the divorce proceedings or whatever. And she kept flying back and forth. Don't ask me why. I don't know what was going through this woman's head. Anyways, so this happened in January 2019.
Oh, wow.
In July of that same year, I guess she didn't have a lot of friends. Like, nobody knew she was missing or anything. But she obviously something happened between there. So this guy calls up one of his buddies and is like, hey, you want to go grab drinks? I need to talk to you. It's important. So the guy goes, all right. So he picks him up in the suburb. The guy used to live in Fort Worth. So he picks him up in the suburb and then he tells his friend, he's like, hey, I forgot my wallet. I need to drive back home. And he's like, okay. So they drive back to the guy's house. And on the way there, the guy tells him, hey, I guess he just confesses to the guy. He says, hey, I killed my wife. He says, I stuck her in the freezer in my house. And I'm going to kill myself later. And the guy's like, I don't believe you. And he's like, all right, I'll show you. So the guy, they go to the guy's house. He opens the freezer up and the dude's deceased wife is in there. And it's so gross. Every article that I read says that the guy explained to him that when he showed him, he was in shock and he slapped the deceased wife's ass and said, ooh, it's cold. And then, I mean, the guy was like, freak the fuck out, dude. Like, what would you do? So he's like, I can't go with you. You need to take me back home. He took him home, called the cops, and he said, hey, I think my friend's suicidal. And by the way, he just showed me his dead wife in a freezer in his garage. Cops show up. The dude already had killed himself, self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head. And so sometime between January and July, because that was the last time anybody saw her, he ended up killing her and he stuffed her in there.
God, what happened to the kid?
Luckily, she had taken the kids to the Philippines. So,
oh, fuck.
Imagine.
Jesus.
I thought this story was going to go along the way. He invited his friend out for drinks and then said, oh, I forgot my wallet. Let's stop at my house. And then on the way, explained it. I was like, so since we're here, want to help me dig a shallow grave?
I thought was it was going to be like, what it was going to be like, no. Oh, just come in with me. I got to get my wallet. And then, oh no, what? My wife's dead. Oh gosh, oh. Somebody must have killed her.
No.
And then like a lie thing. But he was just like, dude, you want to see? Pretty cool.
Straight
like
up
a little
confessed.
Kid with like a fucking, that is, with like, yeah, a dead cat.
Yeah. That is crazy, huh? That's, I found that
that's
out.
That's wretched.
Yeah. So
you could probably find out more. You could probably look that up with all the context clues we gave you.
I gave you enough clues.
Wow.
I didn't believe it. I was like, how did you guys not tell me about this? And they're like, why? We didn't think it was important. I'm like, what do you mean?
So in a weird way, you're kind of saying your company takes aviation safety to like an extreme level.
How so?
To the point that two coworkers would argue about it on their off time and result in a stabbing.
I like the way the fire murderer.
Part 23.9A is not safe.
I like the way they'll I like the way they'll fire a murderer, but they're pretty lax on like COVID safety.
Oh yeah. Oh, dude, that's by the way, stupid. I told you, right, that some guy exposed our cafeteria. Like, he took a video and posted it to Twitter and like tagged the head company and all the news companies. All the chefs in the morning didn't have face masks on. This was already well, like, when we implemented face masks and social distancing. Well, anyways, it didn't seem like they took it too serious. Like, they tweeted back and they were like, we're really sorry. We're going to fix this. Well, one of the chefs that like cooks things, he ended up dying. So he got COVID. He was one of the first people to get it.
Jesus.
He got it, got better, went back to work, worked for a couple months, and then he passed away the day after Christmas.
Damn.
Yeah.
God.
He cooked. He was the cook. He was the one that cooked everybody's omelets in the morning. It was unbelievable. It still is. I'm in shock.
Damn.
That sucks, dude. Yeah, so this week we're going to be talking about classic Unsolved Mysteries, Robert Stack, Season 5, Episode 3. As of now, you can watch the original Unsolved Mysteries on IMDb TV, which is free on Amazon Prime. And I think it's also – I think you can just download IMDb TV. And also, I think they're still on YouTube with commercials.
Yeah, I was going to say I saw a link on YouTube. We've seen this episode a million times because
we've been putting off this episode. Well, we were going to do it, and then new Netflix Unsolved Mysteries came out. And then – so I've had notes written for like – oh, man, since October.
And then the holidays and...
Yeah.
Hey, Eli, truthfully, how many times have you seen this episode? That's it?
Us, probably.
Us, like,
four.
Probably like four or five.
Ugh. Anyway, let's get into it. The first case is an arson case, and
it inspired Backdraft.
There's a lost love's...
Did it really? You're lying.
It seems like it. The story's a lot.
It's a wanted case. It may or may not have inspired Backdraft.
Oh, this is like the only cool case. This case about the smoke daddies.
The yeah, yeah.
These... Is that their new barbecue joint?
Smoke no, that's Daddy's the name.
Firehouse
that's,
barbecue.
That's my name for firefighters.
September 89, we're going to Seattle. This lumber warehouse is burning down, and it's like insanely super hot, like hotter than hot.
Two guys, because of all the smoke daddies that were in there. That's why.
Because yeah, even once they put out that fire, they gotta put the hose on themselves. So smoke daddies. So two of the firefighters go upstairs, and the roof explodes while they're up there. And apparently it exploded into what they described as 5,000 degree wall. What they described as a 5,000 degree wall of flames. And they were saying that they were in danger of being baked alive. Firefighter Matt Johnson couldn't move at all. The other guy was able to get out, but Matt Johnson couldn't move. He was 32 years old, had a baby and a wife, and he died. He pretty much just got baked alive. And they were able to find out pretty quick that it was arson. So these guys have been looking for this guy for years, because apparently this has been going on for years.
So they say.
We're introduced to fire investigator Dennis Fowler. And he says this is 10 out of 10 out of like hot fires for smoke daddies to come and put out. There was a carpet warehouse in 1984 that had burned down. And that's the first time they think that he strikes, no pun intended. And there's something he does about this that that makes it hotter than normal fires. We're talking about hot flames. We're not talking about sexuality at all. Something he did that just made it so much hotter than normal fires. Oh, God, we suck. So there was around 20 similar cases between the U.S. and Canada
picture this arsonist that lights him in like a little thong bikini.
He's just so horny about it. Like when he sees the flame, he's just like, God. Oh, shucks.
Just the tips of the flames just tickled me so.
It's just flames. Hotter. This is so much hotter than normal fires. I just doing the like closed teeth, like, was it from South Park? Like the Hardy Boys? Like,
yeah.
Oh, I've got a claw. I've got a raging claw. Which way is your claw pointing? My claw's pointing this way. Hardy Boys on Hulu. Check it out. So yeah, 20 similar cases in the US and Canada area where the arson fires were super, super hot. And what they described as death traps. Also hard to track because they couldn't figure out what the fuel that ignited the flame, like what it was or where it came from. But he was successful at burning down thousands of square feet in just minutes. So these fires on average were like three times hotter than an average fire. They even burnt down warehouse. They did tests to figure out what kind of fuel this guy was using to burn the shit down.
But the tests weren't very good. I mean,
what did they do?
Well, they used different accelerants to burn down a vacant mall to like compare it next to a burning lumber yard, which is just stacks on stacks of wood.
Of wood? Yeah.
Empty building. Giant bonfire pit.
I was thinking about that too when they were talking. I said, "This is wood. It's a lumber.
It's a warehouse. Controlled fire, but not a controlled experiment."
They should have added all the wood.
They were able to somehow figure out that that thermite, which is made from household objects, was most likely used to start the fire. One of the witnesses to the lumber fire noticed that there was a guy in an older Mercedes that was just like sitting there in a parking lot that was kind of odd.
Just fucking jacking off to those flames. Just
yeah, just oh, this is, they're so hot, and I never know how I did it. It's so hot.
Just look at that smoke billow. Yeah.
The mystery, the mystery is just going to keep me going. It's hot. The flame is hot.
You guys are terrible.
So there's the old Mercedes. Somebody thought that guy was weird.
Look at those firemen work with and that hose.
No, you can't call them firemen anymore. They're smoke daddies.
They're dead. Now. Yeah, the smoke daddies are. The smoke daddies are trying to put this out. Oh, smoke daddies.
Just playing with their hoses.
It's such a... My feelings are so split because one thing that makes me so hot is the hotness of the flames, and another thing is the smoke daddies. I don't want those smoke daddies running in there to the hot, hot flame. Here they come.
Here they come.
Oh, my God.
We're fucking terrible.
No, okay, yeah. Luckily, most these arsons were like in abandoned or empty buildings. It's just that one firefighter who was murdered for sure. It was killed in that first arson, which is like all joking aside, it's fucking
kinda
awful.
Kind of seems like in Backdraft when the arsonist of all the fires purposely burnt down vacant.
Spoiler alert, buildings. It's Scott Glenn. Spoiler alert, it's Scott Glenn. Fuck you, the movie's from the 90s. It's Scott fucking Glenn.
Side note, I used to love that movie.
Backdraft.
It's good.
I used to love that movie. I mean,
it's dumb, but it's good. It's like Twister good.
But it is long.
It is long. I had never seen it, and Dan and I watched it. But yeah, I would say it's like Twister good. Like super 90s ragtag group of people that have a mission. Another movie that's like that is Armageddon. Another movie that's like that is fuck.
Oh, if you ever find yourself at Universal Studios Hollywood, check out the Backdraft exhibit.
What's another movie where there's like a group of people in the 90s? The boat one. The boat one.
Waterworld?
No.
The boat one.
There's always like a girl.
Speed 2.
Who's like one of the boys.
That's what I was going to say. Speed 2?
There's always, oh, Virus with Jamie Lee Curtis. Shut up. No one's seen that movie. Virus? Dad watched it with me. That movie is insane. Oh my God. You want to know what Virus is about?
What like, is Virus about?
Jamie Lee Curtis is a badass like ship captain, like a Navy ship, like cargo ship. And they find this old ghost ship, like a Russian ghost ship. And like an alien zapped down and hit their satellite. So everything on the ship is like become alive, like a like all the dead people on the ship meld with robots, and it's fucking wild, man. Like, it's from like 1998. It has like 10% on Rotten Tomatoes, but the practical effects are like you know, it's like it deserves an applause. It's so wacky.
That sounds wacky.
If you watch Star Trek The Next Generation, watch the episode when the cyborgs overtake the Enterprise and everyone gets assimilated.
Assimilated.
That would be the best
description. Assimilated?
But there's another movie that's exactly like that, with a lady captain on a like ship. I'm just thinking of all... Wait, Contact? No. I don't know. Whatever.
Go ship.
We'll just Ghost? Throw just throw Waterworld in there, sure. anyway, so yeah. So, okay. We're talking about the
Titanic?
Guy, the weird guy in the Mercedes who was like
just jacking off.
Who's just, we don't know what he's doing, but he was in the Mercedes. A witness thought that was odd. But the one that I think leads more credence is another witness says they just saw a guy like nonchalantly walking away from the fire when there was just like a crowd like peering at like, oh shit, that building's on
and
fire.
Not looking there like was a just, villain, like was, walking away.
Yeah.
does it look like, bad?
Total villain status.
But was it more of the walk of shame? Just like no one noticed.
No, it's got to be like a noticing. Cool guy walk, like walking away from an explosion. Back.
Yeah. You never look back in those explosions. Yeah. You just keep walking forward.
I always look back.
Screw that. I'd look back.
Exactly.
I'm
not allowed to say how many things I may or may not have blown up in my lifetime, but I've looked back every single time.
So what's the update?
The update was that they found out it wasn't arson and it was just a big fire that it was just because of all the wood.
It was some teenager smoking weed.
Well, they suspect that some hobos had like a small fire going on in the lumber yard and it spread to the stacks of lumber, which then caught on fire. The extreme heat from all the wood in the lumber yard burning caused the power lines to short out,
that's right,
which caused the sparks and create the explosion effect that the firefighters experienced.
Is that real?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it is.
They decided it was hobos?
Yeah.
I don't know if it was hobos, but it
sorry.
Was, I
think the it was most the highly probable theory is that homeless people accidentally started the fire.
Vagrants.
So it wasn't, even though they were just like, there's a mysterious accelerant. They're like, yeah, what?
So yeah, it's a giant bonfire, like Dan said. That's exactly what it was.
It's like, throw some Harry Potter books there. You got a good old-fashioned book burning.
They burnt down a perfectly good deserted mini mall or strip mall.
Hey, hey, it's just like a mini mall. Wow.
Imagine to be being that like realtor.
When YouTube was new. Imagine. Is that Daniel Tosh is still on? Tosh.0 is still a show?
He is?
Isn't that weird? Yeah, I read an article. Weird. It was like, Tosh.0, this is going to be his last season. And I was like,
what?
What? The show went on past 2012? The fuck?
How has he not gotten Me Too'd?
I think he's just a genuinely nice guy. Yeah, weird, right?
He's really funny.
His stand-up is great, but that show, oof.
I used to like the show. Like when it first started, he would do like, I thought he did pretty funny commentary.
That episode when he had the chocolate rain on, the chocolate rain guy on, that was Emmy award winning television.
That was ridiculous. I don't remember that. The show.
I'm talking about like maybe the first two seasons. I was like, oh, this guy's pretty funny.
Or the episode where him and his staff watched gay porn and with naked and see which one got a boner. Really, really, really thought provoking stuff.
I forgot they did that.
So nobody really knows where this arsonist so it's not an arsonist. Like, I don't know.
Well, some of the fires are still open.
Yeah.
And are undetermined, so they don't know if they're actually arson or accidental. But
it seems to me that it was just wood.
No, I mean, I can see.
Seems to be poor investigative work on the fire marshal's behalf.
I mean, we had to make up a funny, creepy guy who likes fires super, super, super hot. But remember the last arson case we did? There was like a guy who made the video and he was like, look what I did. Yeah, look what I did. Doing a Jack Nicholson impression.
And it ended up just being a teenager that got a little carried away with their Zippo.
The teenager was pissed. Yeah, we never found out exactly why, but they caught him. All right, let's talk about this second case. We're talking about Huey Long.
Do we have to?
This is like I kind of feel like it's an appropriate time to be talking about guns being
taken into Capitol buildings.
Guns being shot off in Capitol buildings. Huey Long is a mysterious legend, according to Unsolved Mysteries. He was a senator to Louisiana in the 20s. He was pretty progressive for that time. But he was kind of like a dick. Like he was very, very.
He was very boisterous. He knew what he wanted. And once he bit onto something that he wanted, he wasn't letting go.
Yeah. And also, apparently, you don't want to be on his bad side, right?
Yeah, because he'll get you.
So he was a lawyer and he came to prominence in the 20s, being his progressive politician, like we said. And in 1934, he's elected governor to Louisiana. And he wanted to redistribute wealth, like, you know, nothing. It's very similar to what's going on now. As the Clash said, why not call up Robin Hood and get us some wealth distribution? So in 1937, good old Huey Long becomes senator of Louisiana. So he's moved up from governor to senator. And he apparently was considering even a president run. And of course, this guy is a typical liberal hero or scumbag, whichever side of history you're on.
And I mean, he was kind of a scumbag. Well, he was, like,
yeah, I mean, he wanted to do good things, but his personality was very abrasive, and he was kind of, yeah, maybe.
If you can't make these votes happen, I'm going to make them. That's what I'm going to go do. I'm going to make those votes.
Well, I don't know. We are going off the terrible reenactment, but we'll get into that. So they said to the rich and powerful, he was bad, of course. He didn't take kindly to people who crossed him. He was very vindictive.
He ruined people's lives if they crossed his path.
Yeah. And spoiler, he does get assassinated, and we're going to talk about the details of that day. And
as long as we don't take 30 minutes to do it.
You mean 61 shots?
It's important to say that this case, there was an update that kind of proves the mystery of this episode, which is people think that he may or may not have been killed by this assassin that history says killed him. And it's pretty much proven that he was not. But let's get into it. Yeah, we'll go over it really quick. Dr. Carl Austin Weiss is the guy who is who history says killed Huey Long. And he had a very powerful father-in-law. His name was Judge Henry Pavey. And he was long targeted by Huey. They had a lot of disagreements politically, and they just didn't get along. So the day is September 8th of 1935. Huey was in Louisiana for a special state legislation session. There were threats against his life, but he just walked through the halls like he didn't give a fuck. He was a ballsy guy, even though he knew that people wanted to off him.
Yeah, but that's because he had, like, a fucking posse of bodyguards following him around. Like, yeah, I mean, it's easy to be like, yeah, I'm a bad motherfucker. I got 20 guys with gats behind me.
With all 45s. All of them had 45s.
Right? And according to history...
like, Shinedown?
According to history, Dr. Weiss, this small, little, like, Jewish, you know, frail-looking dude, pulled out his gun... And Huey Long, he's boisterous in looks as well. He had a big, you know, he's a big Southern gentleman. You know,
he sounds like Foghorn Leghorn.
Yeah. I mean, in the reenactment, he really did. But they show videos of him speaking, and he is very charismatic. Like, he says something about, I was elected this in 19-something, and then the 19-something, the year after, I was impeached. And then everyone laughs, and, oh, we love you, Huey. So history says this little dude, Dr. Weiss, pulls out a gun and shoots him once, and then in turn is shot more than 60 times by Long's security guards.
Dude. Yeah.
And there was a pistol right beside him. Huey died hours later.
I think they said 11 hours later.
Dude, they unloaded on that poor little guy.
Dude. Yeah, the reenactment is wild.
They took the double tap to a whole new level.
Jeez. Look like Swiss cheese.
So kosher Swiss cheese.
5 days after people are starting to figure out that this is a little fishy, the rumor mill starts to go that Huey Long had disagreements with Weiss's father-in-law, the judge. And so they think that this is perfect explanation as to why he would have shot Huey Long. But actually, as history tells us, and people that knew Weiss, they say that his father-in-law and Weiss himself actually didn't really agree on politics either. So it seems like Weiss was more on Huey Long's side of this, of the issue, whatever it may be. And then, of course, people say that Weiss was really there to just have a quick conversation and try to see eye to eye with him and try to be a middleman, if you will.
Yeah, he was there to plead his case for his father-in-law to be like, you know, let's try to
Meet in the middle.
Let's meet the middle. Let's, you know, soften the tensions, if you will. And apparently, I guess the rumor is that he had tried to speak to Huey multiple times throughout the night. And just kept getting brushed off while he was, you know, he would roam the halls and greet other people.
Yeah, and walking back and forth through meetings to the floor of the Senate and stuff like that. It's also important to note that Dr. Weiss had a meal with the judge, and they had like a little argument over politics, but they didn't let it ruin their evening.
That morning.
Well, I mean, at least that's what the the reenactment. It's like, let's not let this ruin this beautiful day. You know, it's
why
like,
father-in-law, why ruin this splendid meal?
Yeah, so it's like we don't know what they actually said. So basically, his father-in-law was hating on Huey Long, and Carl was kind of defending Pavi, the judge, his father-in-law, too long. And everyone thinks it was probably an accident. All the bodyguards, of course, being on edge because of these perceived death threats. Also, he wasn't like hiding in a corner. And also we should, I forgot to note that, Dr. Weiss's son is telling us a lot of these details in the story. He also believes his father was innocent. And I do too. He says that, like, it's not like his dad was hiding in a corner or anything. Like, he was waiting outside of Long's office. He greeted and talked to a bunch of people and colleagues that he knew. No one says they saw a gun. It probably would have been hard to even bring a gun in there, you know?
Yeah, I don't know what the security looked like at that time.
Apparently, it's still not that great at Capitals. Okay. So, according to the episode, around three times he's ignored by Huey Long, and then that's when the last time he's pissed. And people think that he might have actually punched Huey in the face after Huey Long, like, dismissed him or something. Or you know, he, like, got fed up with him and punched him. And then all of a sudden, the shots were fired, and apparently Huey Long says, "He shot me." And then he kind of like he stumbles a little, yeah, and then they just off. And then they just unload on this poor doctor, yeah. And no one even says they saw a gun next to him, and it's a weird story.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a mystery because then his gun is introduced into the story because his son can't find it.
He was trying to spin the fucking story on his deathbed. Huey Long was. He wanted to like be able. He wanted to explain it all, and he. And I think he was, even though he was dying, he was trying to like fix this story. Like, hey, we can't let it be known that my guards killed me. There was just like this stupid mistake.
Yeah.
So apparently Huey Long's colon had been punctured in two places and they fixed it. But what they did miss was a wound in his kidney. And so he died later that day. His nickname was the Kingfish. And he perished into history, as they say in the episode. Weiss had a gun, but it was a .32 pistol. And he was definitely not shot by a .32 pistol. They were very easily able to find that out. The bullet that was actually pulled out of Huey Long was a .38. So, yep, the only gun that Weiss owned was a .32. A second bullet was also found in his body while they were preparing him for burial in a weird scene in the reenactment.
Oh, like, yeah.
What are you doing? This is highly unethical. Is that a bullet?
I forgot about that reenacted scene. That was funny.
So he reaches in and grabs a .45 out of his body. It's so staring fucking weird. Staring
down the barrel of a Ford. Sorry.
45. Another thing that they like to say, Weiss's son likes to say, is it's highly improbable that somebody that wasn't a bodyguard could have gotten into that building without a gun. And then something that I didn't write down, but they talk about in the episode was, like, years and years later, they were able to track down Weiss's gun. Like one of
right, because it went missing.
Yeah, it went missing. One of the detectives had it, right? It was like,
yeah,
it was in the safety deposit box of one of these detectives, and it was a .32, and they could tell, like, they were able to prove that was not the gun that was used to shoot Huey Long. And
yep,
yeah, and then the update is that like years later, somebody that was there, a security or a bodyguard or somebody, admitted that it was a complete accident. That the guy didn't even have a gun on him. And like just basically the story that we told, the second version of the story.
So they were just basically wanting to clear his name.
Yeah.
They didn't want him to go down in history thinking he was a murderer.
Oh, and there's another thing that proves that him being hit first, which is like, he had like a wound on his head and he's like, that's where he hit me. He said that on his deathbed. He mentioned
his lip.
That's where he hit me. So that leads credence to that he was probably just kind of smacked in the mouth by this dude because he wouldn't give him the time of day. And then he got fucking unloaded upon, just relentlessly unloaded upon. It's also weird, and it's also important to note about this weird case is that you hear the dad telling the whole story to you, the son telling the whole story to you, and he's way older than his dad ever was. That always
– yeah.
That's always like a sad thing to me. Reminds me of that the Errol Morris documentary on Netflix, Wormwood, about the guy.
I didn't see it.
No, really? I mean, Errol Morris is fantastic. It's about the guy who this guy, his dad was in the CIA, and he jumped out of a window in the 50s. And he thinks that his dad was set up. Like there was LSD involved in a conspiracy. He was a scientist. He wasn't even like a government man. And they just said, oh, your dad committed suicide and that's it. And there's just so many weird things about it. Like him, the way he jumped out of the window, the way he would have had to have done it because of the way the room was set up. It's a fantastic documentary. It's probably like 4 or 5 episodes. Errol Morris directed it. But it's the son who's been trying to figure out what happened to his dad since the 50s. And he's like, you know, you see pictures of the dad and he's like this 30-year-old man. And you see this 60-year-old man who's just like, what the fuck happened to my dad? And he's so interesting too. He's really enigmatic and interesting. Errol Morris, true crime youngsters, people listening to this, if you should look up Errol Morris and watch everything he's done. I was telling Eli about the Thin Blue Line. Dan and I watched The Thin Blue Line, which is a true crime classic that I had never seen. I've seen the spoof on Documentary Now. But I've never seen it's really great. But yeah, this is just like another mystery to, I don't even think this is a mystery, honestly. I think it's pretty obvious that everybody was panicked. And once one thing happened to Huey Long, they all just blasted this guy into oblivion. Simple.
Yep.
There's a Lost Loves, but let's just fucking not talk about it.
I don't even remember it, to be honest with you. And I watched the episode 3 times.
Yeah, it's really sad. It's about this little girl who's found like beaten on the side of the road.
Oh, the little girl gets left. Oh, yeah, it's really sad.
Yeah, and then when they finally find her parents, the dad's like, "Well, we were having a new one, so we got rid of an old one." It's fucked.
God.
And the little girl's trying to find her baby brother, and she never does. It sucks. It's sad.
No, she does.
Does she?
Yeah, they find him.
Oh man, I guess it's been a while.
Yeah, they find him. They all get reunited.
Oh, finds bro. I even took notes. Mm-hmm. It's been a while. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, it's really sad.
Yeah, it's a bummer. Especially because they like put bruise, beat up makeup on this little girl. Ugh, it's harsh. Anyway, yeah. So speaking of Errol Morris on Showtime, I needed to finish it, but I started this documentary called My Psychedelic Love Story. It's this movie that he just made for Showtime. And it's about what's the guy's name? He was like known as the acid guru. Keith something.
Acid guru?
Yeah. He was like famous in the 60s and he was always on the run. And it's about this lady who fell in love with him. She was really young and now she's so cute. She's like in her 70s and she's some sort of European, I forget where. And she just talks about how she was just super like into it, like just fully engulfed with this guy's bullshit about being, you know, acid, like loving acid and all of his hippie shit. And it's so fun to watch her like tell these stories and just be like, I was so stupid. Like, I'm sorry. You know, I was like, it was dumb. I haven't gotten to like the murdery, true crimey part of it, but I feel like it's coming.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
I listened to 2 podcasts that I really, really liked. One is Tom Brown's Body. It's about a high school.
List, yeah.
It's good. It's about a high school teenager who goes missing. It's really good. Highly suggest it. It's in a small town too in Texas. Also, the other one that I saw, or the one that I listened to, is Your Own Backyard, about the Elizabeth Smart disappearance. That one's really good too.
That name cool sounds about, familiar, but
the cool couldn't. Thing about that one is it's done. So the guy who hosts the podcast, he's just some guy that's from the town. He was an audio engineer, and he was like always like intrigued that this woman went missing and nobody ever found her. And so he's like, well, what can I do? He wanted to do a documentary, but he's like, I know nothing about film. He says, I can't. He's like, I wanted to like do something visual, but he's like, I just decided like, he's like, for like 2 years, I just talked about it. And I finally decided, hey, I'm going to do this podcast. And it's really well done. It's his first ever podcast that he's done. It sounds so good.
Oh, I'm
audio
sure.
And the music. He's a musician, so he wrote all the music. It's so good.
Cool. Yeah, I need to definitely listen to that.
Yeah, that one is a real standout one. And then I also watched Night Stalker on Netflix. That was good.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I want to talk. Let's talk about Night Stalker.
Four episodes
on Netflix.
No. Fucked up.
I know we're going to talk about it. So, what's that, Dan?
While driving around for work today, I was listening to one of the local rock stations, and they were talking about the Night Stalker, and they did a little like Twitter poll. The vast majority of people in El Paso don't realize that Robert Ramirez was a real person. Richard Ramirez was a real person. Like, a lot of them was like, what? He was real? I thought it was just like a character like created for American Horror Story. And it was like
Ika Kui or something?
Yeah. It was like, no, like this dude was fucking real.
Well, he isn't. That's so dumb because he's in two seasons of American Horror Story. Obviously in American AHS 84, he plays himself. He's alive. He's a serial killer. But in the hotel season, the Halloween episode that year,
Snowflake, you scared the crap out of me.
That's a really fun episode. Even if you don't like that show, everybody should watch it. All the serial killers get together. All the ghosts of all the serial killers get together and have like a Halloween dinner at the hotel.
Oh, that's cool.
And Richard, but in that one, they have two different people playing Richard Ramirez. Benjamin Bratt plays Richard Ramirez in that one. But in American Horror Story, the guy they got was really good. They should have fucking fucked his teeth up.
Just taking him out back and just bashed his teeth in a little bit.
Ah, dude, yeah. Yeah. In 84, in 84, he's definitely like a cast member. Like he's a character. It's, yeah. And they do make him a little too cool. So I don't know. I do agree with that.
But no, it was just so funny that like the vast majority of people that answered this survey
didn't even know he was real.
Yeah. Let alone from El Paso.
Yeah, he's from El Paso too.
Yeah.
The stalkings and the murders and stuff that happened in California, but he was originally from El Paso.
Well, there is a story about him like breaking it. He worked at a hotel in El Paso and he like broke into a girl's room and like attempted to rape her, I think. Like there's some early crimes. But yeah. What were you gonna say about the documentary?
I was just gonna say you pointed out that the documentary was so different because it was through the lens of the investigators trying to catch him. It's a lot less about him and who he was as a person.
Yeah, and the victims too. Like they're like, let's talk to people that relate to the victims. Like they give you like 5 minutes of like in the last episode of like Richard Ramirez, you know, abuse, El Paso, like a little bit of his upbringing, but they don't, you know, it's like everybody knows that part of it, you know?
Yeah. We didn't know. What I didn't realize was the little kidnappings that he would do to the kids.
The children. That was so fucked up. I had no idea. That was like one of the first scenes in it, right? Like where that little girl, where that lady's talking about being a little girl.
Yeah.
Heartbreaking. Fucking horrific.
Dude. Oh.
And that's,
if you want to get mad, go watch that.
Yeah. And if you want to get really mad, watch the Trials of Gabriel Rodriguez.
I couldn't even, dude.
Oh, dude. I still haven't finished it. I still need to watch the last episode so I can find out what happened to those fucking pieces of shit. But anyway, another thing I want to point about the Richard Ramirez documentary, like Eli was saying, they focus on the investigators, but what's his name? The fucking Gil.
I don't know. I didn't know we were going to go like talk about him. So I didn't even think to or to remember?
Gil Carrillo. So they focus on, like, there's two, there's two of the main detectives, and they, and Gil Carrillo was a super young detective, Mexican, obviously, and he worked with, I forget the name of the other investigator, but he was like the head honcho. He'd worked on the
Frank Cerno or something like that.
Yeah.
So he had worked on the, was it the Hillside Stranglers? And so he had already.
That's crazy too. I didn't even. I like how they touched on it briefly. I need to go back because they. Yeah, whatever. I could go
that's
on.
That's the Hillside. That's another crazy story. The Hillside Stranglers. There's also a really, really good graphic novel. That they've been trying to make into a movie for like 15 years, based on the Hillside Stranglers. It would make a fantastic movie. It's so cinematic. So he was like assigned, like this dude Frank Lacerno, whatever. He wanted to work with Gil because he was young, and I think mainly because he was like he was Hispanic, and he was like, you know, he could speak Spanish, and I don't know. But it's just the best part of the show is seeing this guy who has a fucking heart of gold. He's not like this like old rugged fucking like detective that you see like when you see retired detectives in true crime documentaries. Like, they're like, I don't want to talk about it, or they're so stoic, or whatever. Like, this is a sweet teddy bear man. And you're like, this is the guy who fucking caught it. And another thing is, I always just thought is the Richard Ramirez story ended with cops being so stupid and just a bunch of civilians finding him and beating him up. But
they, it's more like a team effort.
They found his, they figured out who he was in San Francisco, and you know, they had a picture of him, and you know, and there were like the like icing on the cake was people like having the picture in every paper around them and being like, oh shit, that's the guy.
Yeah,
so it's pretty interesting. And and he was way more horrific than I thought. Like, that's what I learned, is I knew he was fucked up, but Jesus, when they talk about him like taking somebody's eyes out of their face after they were dead.
Oh yeah.
And
he took them with him.
And according to an interview, his favorite Billy Idol song, he loved Billy Idol, and his favorite Billy Idol song is Eyes Without a Face.
That's creepy.
It's a good song. It's actually a good song. Really fucked up. And I remember one day we were reading about Richard Ramirez. We were driving around, and I found this like questionnaire that somebody sent him in jail that was like, what's your favorite movie and what's your favorite? And I should find it and post it. It's really weird and interesting. But yeah, he liked Billy Idol and he liked AC/DC a lot.
He had that hat from the thrift
sparkly
store.
It's a sparkly AC/DC hat too. Like,
geez. Is it? I didn't even remember that.
Yeah, it was like had a shine on it. It's fucking, yeah, that guy was, oh my god, just pure fucking evil. He just didn't give a fuck. What does he say? Like, oh, death always came with the territory. Okay, I'll see you at Disneyland. Such a fucking asshole, dude. Ugh. Have you seen The Ripper on Netflix yet?
No, I haven't seen that yet. That's on my list.
Oh, dude, it's very good. What's that guy's name? Peter Sutcliffe, the Yorkshire Ripper. That's it's actually pretty similar with once you see the Ripper.
Uh-huh.
They focus a lot on the victims. And then Peter Sutcliffe, he gets a little more than Richard Ramirez because he isn't as known as Richard Ramirez, but he was really weird. But they really do a good job of focusing on the victims. Pro tip, watch with subtitles because they're from Yorkshire. Like, it's northern. It's a very heavy accent, but dude, it's crazy. They track down a guy's voice to the fucking one square mile where he must live because accents are so specific in England. Like, they're like, well, he sounds like this, so he's got to live within like this 5 mile radius because that's how people talk in this. This is weird how big.
That's how they caught him.
It's well,
because of his,
well, not catch him. You have to see how it goes because, yeah. But they were able to tell.
But that's how they narrowed it down.
Yeah, this voice. Yeah. Someone called and claimed to be the Ripper. And they were like, this accent is interesting. But yeah, that's how specific England is with their accents. And with like America, it's like, yeah, there's like 5 or 6 different like regional American accents.
Yeah.
And it's so big, but like in England, there's so many, like you could drive an hour and you're like, what the fuck are they saying? If you want to know that story, it's fucked up for sure. The Ripper on Netflix is very well done. If you don't know the story of the Yorkshire Ripper and the monstrous Peter Sutcliffe.
Oh, now I got some other things to watch.
Have you ever seen that movie Prisoners from 2013?
With Hugh Jackman.
With Hugh Jackman and Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah, dude.
Dude, I found it at Dollar General. It was like a $2.99 Blu-ray. And I really like that director, Denis Villeneuve.
It's so good.
I love that director because he did the new Blade Runner and he's doing Dune and
Arrival. Crazy.
And yeah, it was long, but I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Oh man, I've always like think about like revisiting that, but anything that has to do with kids, man.
Yeah,
I know. I don't want to spoil it for people who haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's really good. Go to your Dollar General and see if there's a copy laying around. That was a good one, man. I was like, wow, this is totally worth it.
I can't believe you'd never seen that.
Yeah, it is one that just – it's like a – this week I've been getting into noir movies. I watched and made Dan watch a Brian De Palma movie, Femme Fatale, which is
– Oh, yeah, you told me.
Brian De Palma is so good at making movies, but the plots of his movies are so ludicrous. So it's just like – like you just watch the shots and how well made the movie is. And then there's like lots of boobs and there's always a guy with a camera who's looking at a girl through a window at her boobs.
Voyeur.
And, and this one happened to be Antonio Banderas.
He's like got a fetish kind of like,
yeah, there's Quentin voyeur. Tarantino and yeah. Feet. I feel like people either love or hate Brian De Palma. And I like him. The most original of his movies, like everybody's seen Scarface and The Untouchables and Mission Impossible, but the real Brian De Palma movies where there's like somebody with black gloves murdering someone and you don't find out till the end.
I like that.
And then, I watched an Orson Welles one called Touch of Evil, which is a classic. Charlton Heston was painted brown and plays a Mexican man, even though the movie's in black and white. Like, why? Yeah, he's total brown face, and it's black and white.
That's funny.
It's like, why, guys? And it was really good. Prisoners, which they consider a neo-noir, because it's like, you know, a potboil or a mystery, but it's neo because it's not from the 50s, I guess. I don't know. that was really good. And then I watched... You know what I watched last night? I watched The Dark Knight, and I decided that's a really good James Bond movie.
The Dark Knight is a good James Bond movie?
Yeah, dude. It has everything that a James Bond
movie. That movie's flawless, man.
You know, the dialogue in that movie is so, like, no word is, like, there's no extra words. Like, just everything everybody says is, I don't know how to explain it. Like and then there's lots of repeating a line, like somebody will say it, and then at the end of the movie another person will say it, and it's different context, and it's just like the writing. There's something in it.
Yeah,
like,
dude, that's a great movie.
I think Chris Nolan's really good at that, like at his dialogue. Like,
so didn't at the last movie? Didn't he have to change it? Yeah, he changed the script because Heath Ledger passed away. He had Joker come back. In the original script.
Well, I don't even think he had a script written when Heath Ledger died, because Heath Ledger died before that movie even came out. Like, in the credits, it's like in loving memory of Heath Ledger. And a stuntman who died in a Batmobile sequence. He's also in loving memory. I looked up his name.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
A stuntman died during Dark Knight. I think I might actually watch Dark Knight Rises tonight.
I think because people criticize Dark Knight Rises because there's little things in there that like the way that they cut it and the way that they put it together, it doesn't flow as well.
I really like Dark Knight Rises, but Dark Knight and Dark Knight Rises feel like visually similar, even though Dark Knight Rises is definitely more of a sequel to Batman Begins. But I do think Batman Begins is probably the strongest one because it's the only one about Batman that has that sweet Christopher Nolan dialogue. The other ones aren't about Batman. They're not really about Batman.
Yeah, they're not. But anyways, I was going to say, I think the way that he defends it is, or that people defend him, I don't know if he's ever came out and like defended the movie or anything, but I think people have kind of figured out that it wasn't as strong of a script as Dark Knight, only because it wasn't something he had thought of. He had kind of had like a loose plan. And then when Heath Ledger passed away, he's like, well, I can't do that. So I got to do something completely different. That's what people say.
I actually heard that he was just going to have like a cameo as one of the escaped villains wandering around.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
But yeah. Dark Knight, man. You got a crazy villain. You got Morgan Freeman giving your Batman gadgets. You got him going to China to steal a guy. I don't know. It's so James Bond. it's a great movie. And Maggie Gyllenhaal, way better than Bosworth? Kate Beckinsale? No, what was her name?
No, you're thinking of
Kate Bosworth.
Katie Holmes.
Who's Bosworth? She played Lois Lane in Superman Returns. Kate Bosworth. Oh, God. Sorry, guys. Okay. So anyway, any more true crimey things?
Not really.
Yeah, no. Scam Goddesses is pretty fun. There's actually two good scam shows. There's like the Scam Goddess, and then there's Fraudsters on the Last Podcast Network, and they did a deep dive on the Miss Cleo thing. Mm-hmm. Fraudsters. That was pretty interesting.
Call me for your free reading.
Yeah, dude, she had a pretty sad life.
Call me now.
Yeah. And she definitely was not from... She was definitely from Compton and not from...
We knew that. That's a bummer.
Yeah, but she... Yeah, they made a lot of money off of people. And it was fucked up. Interesting story.
People actually called that thing?
Dude, yeah. They even talked to some guy who worked for a summer doing it. And they asked what kind of people called.
Wow.
He said there was the believers, which was very little people. There was people that just wanted somebody to talk to. And then there's people that genuinely just like went along with it.
This was a podcast?
Yeah, Fraudsters. The first couple episodes, they talk about Miss Cleo. Like, they do. Yeah, it's pretty interesting. They talk about, like, the psychic network or whatever it was called. The psychic hotline. And how they just, like, auditioned people and got Miss Cleo. And, yeah, I'm butchering it, but it's really interesting. Everybody remembers Miss Cleo.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah.
I remember Miss Cleo.
Yeah, but thanks for hanging out with us. We'll be back for Season 5, Episode 4 next week. We're back... to it. We're doing it hard. And yeah, thanks for hanging out with us. Welcome to 2021. By the time you hear this, we're gonna have a new president. That's nice. Thank you, Dan, for hanging out as always, and Eli. For every mystery, there's someone somewhere who knows the truth. Perhaps that someone is listening, and perhaps that someone is you.
Smoke Daddy's forever.